What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Because you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Welcome back. All the smoke. Currently under new management.
Goddamn right.
We work for ourselves now.
I'm my collar off. I done popped it the last couple of days.
You're on popping that motherfucker off, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to keep this one on today.
I like that Bert and Ernie you got on.
Appreciate
today,
it,
though.
Man. You know, LV.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Louboutin
down. You already know it. Man, we got a man, one of the greatest to ever do it today. But yep. I'm going to go ahead and let you introduce since you're the boxing guy.
Oh, man. Well, this is somebody who is definitely a legend. We've had boxers like Roy Jones, Tank Spence, Errol Spence, Charlo, Ryan Garcia. Everybody speak highly of him, look up to him, admire him. Somebody that they try to pattern their careers after. Five-time world champion, Hall of Famer, SOG, the legend, Andre Ward.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show, bro.
Happy to be on with y'all, man.
Honored to have you.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations, book, inspired memoir, Killing the Image, about your incredible boxing journey and life outside of the ring. Can you speak to why you felt it was time to write this and share your story with the world?
Yeah, man, it's a time and a place for everything. You don't always know, you know, when that exact time is. But I always knew I was going to tell my story one day. You know, even when I was young in the game, 19, 20, I knew like, man, I don't want to give everything to the media. And I don't want to try to, you know, promote my fights through my family trauma, our struggles.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's a give and take with that. And it's pros and cons. Some people may say, well, you know, if you'd have did more, you'd have been more relatable. It's like, maybe. But that stuff was like very dear to me and very sacred to me, man. And my mother wasn't ready to talk about that stuff. My father had passed and I for sure wasn't ready to talk about it. So as I started progressing throughout my career, you know, I start getting, you know, some movement. Like, it was like, man, let me try to pitch this book. And I thought I was ready to write it 6-7 years ago. But y'all know, being in media and taking on these projects, it's a process. So it popped off when it popped off. The doc jumped off first on Showtime, and I think it was the perfect timing because with the doc, we touched on it, but with the book, we go a lot deeper.
You have a favorite or most meaningful chapter or story that you could share that's in the book?
I really love talking about my childhood and the good and the bad. You know, the boxing part, you know, is a chapter in the book called A Champion Is Born. And that's a story about me and my father watching George Foreman and Michael Moore. You know, Michael Moore was beating up on George for most of the fight. And we had at that time, you know, it's the early 90s, so we got the big screen TV that's on the floor. And we watching the fight. And, you know, my dad was a big George Foreman fan. And I just see George Foreman, he figured it out. He threw four punches, 1-2, stepped back, threw another 1-2. And Michael Moore is on the canvas in Vegas, laid out. And we went crazy. And from that moment forward, I started dreaming about, and what would it be like to be in that arena? What would it be like to have those commentators talking about me? So that's on, you know, just the origin of my love for the sport. That's very dear to me. But if you look at like the back of that book, it says, what if I die? You know, that was a moment where I was in the streets heavy, using drugs, numbing with alcohol. I didn't really care about boxing no more. Damn. I was through with it, giving my whole life
to
it.
At what age was that?
Man, this was like 18 years old, 18, 19 years old. It's about 18 years old. And almost had a overdose.
Damn.
We popping ecstasy, all kind of stuff at that time. And that's meaningful to me because it could have ended right there, but that was my new birth. That was my rebirth right there. And so when people see me today and they hear me talking about my faith or they see me move the way that I move, it all started from that moment.
That's deep. The city, San Francisco, California. Tell the people that don't know that clump the Bay altogether, what's the difference between the city and the town, which is Oakland?
Yeah, it's just different, slightly different culture. Same culture, but different. So cats in Frisco may dress a little different, maybe talk a little different, but it's really all the same. You know, at the end of the day, it's a 30-minute drive from San Francisco to Oakland. So slightly different flavor, slightly different way they move, but it's really a lot of the same energy.
Talk to us about your upbringing, young Dre, before you got to the point where you wanted to box. What was your childhood like growing up in the city?
Man, I really had a normal childhood in some respects. And then what made me different than most of my peers, though, is that, you know, I had two parents that were drug addicted. My mother was a full-blown addict, you know. She was in San Francisco. I was in the East Bay. And all I knew was that my mom was struggling with crack cocaine. That's all I knew. And I just knew she wasn't there at that time. And that affected me. And I didn't realize how much it affected me until I got older and started not relating to women well, having trust issues, not knowing how to put myself out there, being guarded. And for my father, he was a functional addict. He owned his own business and he would work all day. And when he came home, he would have that monkey on his back. And his drug of choice at that time was heroin. So everything was normal except that.
When you get older now and you kind of look back, you know, because I've gone through therapy in my life to unpack my childhood, what was kind of your advice or what you did to kind of unpack that childhood trauma or those childhood issues you struggled with? Did you ever seek counseling or anything like that? Was that beneficial for you?
Very beneficial because, you know, I have a tendency to not talk, and like a lot of men.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, like I would internalize a lot of trauma and pain, and I just say that I'm good, and I'm really not. And it really took me, you know, really my faith was the intersection that I needed. And a lot of times people hear about faith and they look at it like a crutch, or, you know, they look at it like, you know, what about these people over here being hypocrites? And it's like, well, I can't speak for them. But what I do know is if I did not have a personal relationship with God, if he didn't come and touch my life, I wouldn't be standing here right now. And not only just a personal relationship, but I found a church. And my pastor, Napoleon Kaufman, former Raider, All-American at UW, connecting with that man and then him helping me understand the things he overcame, his childhood trauma, and how he got delivered and set free and how he was whole. I said, man, I want that. And then I started looking at the community of people within the church like, man, that's a good brother right there. Man, that's another good brother right there. So it's really me opening myself up to God and me opening myself up to community is really what helped me heal and continue to grow. And I'm still going through a process. Absolutely.
Do you feel like opening up and sharing some of the most vulnerable moments in your life, whether it be your book or your doc, has also kind of been therapeutic for you?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Because I had to overcome a lot of shame doing, you know, my doc and my book. And that's really what the title of this book is all about, you know. Talking to my pastor, and I'm like, man, these youngsters don't understand, man. I've been through this. I done did way more than what they did. He said, Dre, you got to kill the image. And at first I thought he was saying that, you know, it was something pretentious or fake that I was presenting. He said, no, who you are is real. It's just not who you've always been. And I had to dig deep, and I had to open up those old wounds, and I had to come face to face with young Dre. Even though I had overcome a lot and I had healed a lot, it was still some things that I was still carrying shame about. Because you know how it is. You look at your younger self like, dude, you was tripping. And I'm so far removed from that individual, it's hard to believe, writing this book, going through this doc, that I did some of those things or moved the way that I move or had some of those mindsets. So, but it was necessary.
Yeah.
And in doing that, it may kill some of the images that people have of me. It may make you be a stronger believer in what you know, I say I believe in and who I am. But it was a necessary thing that I had to do. And the testimonies that I've been getting from the doc and the book have been just crazy, from all over the world. Just people saying, man, I can relate. My mother was on drugs too. Man, I didn't know you went through that. Man, it makes me even more of a supporter. So, man, it's been a blessing.
I think that's why it's even more important to have a relationship with God, because like you say, you talk to a therapist. Who they go to with their problems?
Yeah.
Who they talk to about their problems, right? Yeah. So it's important that you have a relationship with somebody that's the only person that's not going to judge you. You know what I'm saying? Because you can go to a therapist, you can give them all your, they going to somebody with their problems. Who you going to?
Yeah.
Right? So that's the only person that you should go to. And I tell people all the time, I know I'm not perfect, but I live my life every day to show God I deserve everything he blessing me with.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's how I keep myself in a good space.
Yeah. Now that's real. And I feel so strong about what I believe because I know me.
Right.
I'm not the type of person that could read a dead book that has no power and just follow a bunch of laws and precepts and ideas. Like at some point, that's not gonna do it for me. Like if it's just knowledge, but something hit me that I never felt before and I can't deny it. I don't know everything about the word. I don't know everything about, I'm a minister in my church. I'm a youth pastor. I'm still growing. I don't know everything, but what I do know, I can never deny the power that hit me and how it changed my life and how it kept me these last 20 years, because y'all know how it is, it's pressure. And
daily,
it's daily pressure. Every city you go in, it's somebody pulling on you. It's a pitfall. It's a pit hole. It's a pothole. It's something that it's something. It's a game somebody trying to run. Yeah. And man, I seen God keep me, man, throughout a 20-year career. Did I do everything right? Absolutely not. But did I know that, man, I'm being kept by a power that's stronger than myself? Absolutely.
Picking up in boxing in the 90s, it was looked at as great Virgil Hunter.
Yeah.
Talk about Virgil.
He was a godsend because, you know, he was already playing a dual father role when I met him. You know, I met him at the gym. I had another trainer at that time. And that trainer, you know, he was more like, you know, take two punches to give one. And my father, who loved Muhammad Ali, he was like, I don't want my son to get hit. You know what you mean? It's boxing. He's going to get hit. He said, no, I need to teach him how to hit and not get hit. Well, it just so happens that Virgil sitting there that day at the gym listening to the conversation. And he said, man, you want your son to learn how to hit and not get hit? He said, man, come talk to me. He said, that's my special. That's what I do. And that sparked my dad's interest right there.
So you didn't know him then at all?
I didn't know him at all. I had, you know, it's what you call a house trainer, like a guy that you go to if you sign up at this gym. He was the house trainer. Verge just happened to be there working out. And so I'm hitting the bag and I'm looking over at Verge and he nodding his head like.
What age were you at this time?
I was 9.
Okay.
He giving me the nod of approval and I'm looking at him, he looking at me, and then him and my dad, like I said, started dialoguing, and he made boxing fun for me. My dad was all or nothing. Man, I told you to throw the jab, get your hands up. And me as a kid at that time, I just shut down. Verge made it fun, like, look at this, baby, go do it like this. Okay, get your hand up. It was like a song and a dance. So I knew right away I wanted to train with him. But I'm grateful for that man, because when my father passed when I was 18 in 2002, and he stepped right in.
He stepped up.
And Verge grew up in West Oakland. He knew how to move into town. He knew the ins and outs. He was 20 years as a probation officer. And he knew how to talk to me at that time. And he would get on me. He would say things to me. Hey, bro, God got his hand on you. I don't know what you're doing out there, but it ain't going to work for you. And I would get mad. I would fight him, man. Why you speaking on me, man? Why you speaking that on me, man? I'm trying to do my thing. But if I didn't have that man saying stuff like that to me, and even being having a prophetic voice in my life telling me stuff that's gonna happen before it happened, I would have crashed out. I would have crashed out. Because I needed a strong male figure in my life.
What would you say besides him being the you know, being there at the time when you were starting and seeing something in you, what would you say that made y'all a great pair?
I just liked how he thought. I liked how he coached. You know, like, I'm not a dude that needs to be, I don't need rah-rah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm already, like, I'm very much in my head, and I'm very competitive, and I don't like to lose. So I don't need that drive, and I don't mind working hard. I need you to remind me of who I am in certain moments, remind me why we here, and, you know, talk that talk to me. Baby, you know why we here.
Mm-hmm.
He don't know what he getting into, but we finna show him. That's the kind of stuff that Virgil do. He just knew how to push them certain buttons, and I took it and ran with it.
You being a Hall of Famer, and this will be a good question for you, how important is it to have a good trainer?
Man, I honestly think you got to have more than that to survive at the highest level. You got to have, sometimes that trainer is a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that trainer is a father figure. Sometimes he's a brother, because it's so many emotions you going through when you're not in the ring, stuff you're dealing with in life. Then when you get a fight coming up and you in training camp, it's a lot, man. And you need somebody to know you beyond just a fighter. Like, I couldn't imagine having just a hired hand, just somebody that only see you at the gym.
Right.
I needed a father figure. And, you know, Virg used to tease me, you know, when I was even a pro fighter, said, man, you a head case. Because I never felt like I was doing enough. I always felt like somebody's outworking me. He tell me to take a duck. I can't take a duck. He said, man, dude, you just sparred 12 rounds today. We got 3 weeks before the fight is coming. You good. I'm not good, man. You a head case, man. You tripping.
Mm.
I needed that. I needed him to talk to me that way and be that father figure, that brother, and that counselor at times.
Because we can be our worst enemy at times.
Yeah, I needed that. Mm-hmm. I needed that because, you know, like, a lot of the things that made me a champion, if it's not under control, it can not be good, you know, because it's an unusual type of drive, and it's – you gotta realize too, I hadn't lost since I've been on a crazy win streak. I haven't lost since I've been like 14 years old. All throughout nationals, Olympics, that's a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And in hindsight, that probably affected me in my pro career a little bit because I didn't want to lose so bad that I probably didn't fight as loose as I could have fought sometimes. And flow like I could have flowed because I'm trying to be so perfect and make sure I meet the mark and do everything I was supposed to do. But Virg is always there to talk to me. He knew how to talk to that kid in me. Even in my 20s and 30s, baby, you know, that's how he talked to me as a kid. So I know when I hear that, that's Virg talking to me as a young man. And I would always respond, man. So it was much more than just a trainer.
I see a lot of the coaches and trainers these days training their sons.
Yeah.
What do you think of the state of boxing with the trainers and coaches now?
I'm not one that says it can't work. It's just not easy.
It got to be rare, like Boots and Bozy, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and I think Bill is doing a good job with Devin.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough because, you know, a lot of times fathers, man, they as a father, you gotta know that you work for your son because he's paying you. But I'm still your father.
Yeah.
And you gotta know when to be dad, and you gotta know when to be trainer.
Yeah.
And you also can't live through your son.
Mm-hmm.
That's your baby. I don't care how big he get, how old he is. That's your son. And when y'all get in that ring, you gonna walk down them steps. And that boy you raised, he gonna be in that ring with that other man by himself. So you gotta always remember that. For the sons, they gotta know when to let dad be dad and say, man, he telling me the right thing. But when to say, nah, dad, I got this. So it's a lot of dynamics, man, that's hard for trainers and for sons and fathers to toe them lines. It's hard, but it could be done. It's just rare.
Who did you idolize in boxing coming up?
Man, my big three was, you know, Roy B-Hop. Jones, B-Hop, and Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And my first one was Roy. Country boy came up in Pensacola, Florida. Roy had the duck tail in the back.
Yeah.
Roy had me wanting to get the little duck
tail. Y'all must have forgot.
Oh, man. But he was a country boy with swag, though.
Yeah.
It was something different about him. And I liked the way he talked. I liked his accent. I liked his fighting style. And he did everything wrong, but it worked out for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with B-Hop, I identify with B-Hop because I never felt like I was the most talented. And B-Hop wasn't the most talented, but he was super, super disciplined. I would talk to him on the phone, and he B-Hop the type of dude that if you bring a soda in the gym, man, you got that soda pop in the gym, and that's poison. He'll get at you for bringing a soda in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you eating all that red meat? Like, he was that way. You know what I'm saying? Spent a lot of time in the pen, and I related to him as far as his discipline, and that's why he beat a lot of guys he shouldn't beat. And with Floyd, his work ethic. Floyd, Floyd got the money, he got he got the big whips, he got the big houses, but he worked like he was broke.
Stayed locked still in.
To this day. Even doing exhibitions. I took something from each one of them dudes, and I felt like I was a hybrid of all three.
Made it your own.
How would you describe your style of fighting?
Yeah, I don't have one. I'm whatever I need to be.
That day, to win.
Tonight, I may need to make it ugly. I may need to let you feel my physical strength, let you know I'm not going to let you bully me physically, like when I fought Saikyo Beacon. It may be a night when I fight Mikael Kessler for my first title fight. I'm going to outbox you, bro. You got a European style. You straight up and down. No special effects. And I'm going to let you feel that. Then you may have a situation where Alan Green, where I got to go in there and make it an inside game. You've seen a different side. So it's like Bruce Lee said, I was formless. I'm what I need to be. Because if I just have a certain style, somebody at some point that's going to get exploited.
Yeah.
Because they watching film on me like I'm watching film on them. And I could ill afford to have a bad night. So I got to figure it out. So I didn't really have no style.
We spoke to this before we got on camera about athletes' mentality, particularly NBA players, and sitting out and resting or having a feeling like you're having an off night coming into a game and being able to, you know, turn that around and turn it into a solid game or give maximum effort. The mental side of your game, because it's just you, your teammates can't help you, no one else can help you. Have you ever gone into a fight like, damn, I don't feel like I have it tonight, but obviously been able to pull it out?
I had a handful of those.
You won with a messed up hand, with a
broken hand, right? Yeah.
Me and Carl Froch, physically I feel good. I just had, you know, I hurt my hand and I knew it was bad. And that was one night.
But you knew that before getting in the ring and still winning there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have no guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
I eat what I kill. Yeah. I got to go in there. If I don't work, I don't eat. And we already the week of the fight too. So it's like, what you going to do? We already here on the East Coast. We a couple days out. So I had to take that. When I fought Kovalev, same thing. Tore my ACL in 2008. And just the training, the running, the sparring, all the stuff that I did, it slowly started getting worse. That was the worst training camp I ever had. The whole camp, I'm stopping and going. Should I pull out of the fight? Verse telling me, man, God got you. There's going to be some adversity, but you're going to be all right. I got my lawyer and my brother, Josh Dubin, saying, bro, you can't go into the fight like this. Jay, my manager, Jay, well, let's just wait and see. Let's hold on and see. Jay thinking the business side, because he know we had just got in business with Roc Nation. This is the first big fight. We don't want to pull out and send that kind of message. So it was a very, very, very difficult situation. I'm fighting the most dangerous man probably in the game at that time. I'm at my rented house 2 hours before we getting ready to go to the arena, and I'm looking at this doctor drain fluid out my knee. And I'm in disbelief, like, man, I couldn't believe it. It's like, it was almost like a dream. Like, man, this is really happening. Like, I'm really going to fight this dude with one good leg. But I'm not going to say I'm built different or nothing like that, man. I just got a certain mindset, man. I just, like, I'm going to bring it. And you might get me, but it's not going to be easy. That's just my mindset. I'm not always going to look great. I'm not always going to feel great. But if you beat me, you're going to be a good man. Because I'm coming ready, even if I don't feel 100%. Right.
What's your take on the way young boxers these days taking criticism? Because, like, especially with social media being so, and everybody having an opinion.
Yeah.
Like, y'all was criticized. Mike Tyson was criticized more than anybody. But y'all, they dealt with it a different way, and not, like, perfect example.
Yeah.
It's people that be at the fights that y'all see every day, the commentators, who y'all have no relationship with, that say worse things. But you'll see somebody who has to say the same thing they say, but you have a relationship with them, and you take it a different way. Why is it not taken the same way from the same, you know, from when it's been said by the same people, same thing been said by different people?
I think for the youngsters, man, I think they expect that from the boxing media, but people outside the boxing media, they got respect for, and they like, not you too.
Right.
Not you. Like, you can call me with that. Like, why you get online? I think that's a lot of the mindset.
Yeah.
It's rough, bro. It's rough out here in them social media streets, man, because you got to really be strong. You got to really be strong because you got random people, and you got people you know that
come. It's harder now.
It's harder, bro.
I feel like it
is. You know what I'm saying? We was getting criticized really just basically off our game and what we plan. Now people
criticize
people.
You got to look
people.
For it too. You got to read a newspaper clip in. You got to, you know what I'm saying? Like, you pick your phone up.
It's
you have
everywhere.
A bad game or a bad fight, you see all the mentions 150, 50 minutes. You already know what time it is. You click that mention, it's on. Just that quick. It's hard.
Right.
You ain't have to pick up the paper. You know what I'm saying? It's different. So it's not easy for the youngsters, man, but it's also a necessary evil though. And I say that because you can't always, like, you need some people.
Yep.
That element is good for you.
Yeah, they only talk about you because you're great, though.
Yeah, it's good
you're
for
doing
you, though.
Right.
It keep you humble.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a part of it.
And it keep you grinding, like, as a fighter. It's not normal to get in the ring with another man with 8 ounce or 10 ounce gloves on and fight in front of the whole world. Like, it's normal because you grew up doing it, but it's really not normal.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep having reasons why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. So at first, I want to be a champion. Well, you got that now. I want to make money. Well, you got a few M's now. Now what's your reason? So I'm not saying you give a bunch of people credit,
right?
Because I evolved into that. At first it's like, I'm gonna prove y'all wrong. Then I evolved into, man, the people that's been rocking with me, I'm gonna prove y'all right. Y'all gonna be wrong just by default.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta keep, as your career evolves, why do you do this?
Finding new.
What are your reasons?
Mm-hmm.
And getting that backlash when you have a bad night is just a good reminder, they don't love me.
No,
this is a business.
Mm-hmm.
Let me treat it as such, and not let me get too. I can't romance the game too much.
Yeah, but you also got people that know you're better than your performance too.
For sure,
that really support you and that want to see you reach your full potential.
And you got to be able to take that on the chin.
Exactly. That's my point. Everybody that's talking about you, not standing to demean you.
Yeah.
They want to see you do better and know you have better in you.
Yeah.
And I take that shit to heart because the stuff they said about me in the brawl when I was about the person I was. Mm-hmm. When that shit happened, it feels good for me today to sit here today and look at all these people knowing that they wrong, totally wrong. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So that's what I'm saying. People have to learn how to use that shit as ammunition.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because they're going to talk about you regardless. But I love people talking about me because I'm doing something great.
Yeah.
They ain't talking about nobody that ain't doing shit.
Yeah.
So you got to know how to use both of them. You know what I'm saying? I'm the master at that. I'm the master at that because I love when people said the worst things about me.
Yeah.
And I probably got some of that shit tattooed on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of it's true.
Some of it is true.
Yeah.
Run this.
All right.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When your child fights sleep, it can feel like a battle you'll never win. Imagine a bedtime routine you all look forward to, where you cuddle in and let the stress of the day melt away. Welcome to Sleep Tight Stories, a calming weekly podcast that brings bedtime stories, cuddles, and comfort to families worldwide. The stories are quirky, relatable, and spark wonder without overstimulation, so listeners can fall asleep and stay asleep. Each episode is narrated by me, Cheryl McLeod, a second grade teacher, and written by my husband, Clark, an eternal second grader at heart. Tune in tonight and bond over a story before drifting off to sleep. Make bedtime the sweetest part of your day. Sleep Tight Stories. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights' sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You spent your majority of your career cleaning out the super middleweight division. 106 state, then you became the king of the lightweight division. Light heavyweight, 175.
Yeah.
A story career. Let's go through a little bit of Mikael Kessler into the Super 6 tournament. That was special. Yeah. I wish they would do that again.
Yeah.
Talk about your experience in that Super 6 tournament.
Sink or swim moment. I had to really be who I said I was.
I enjoyed that.
I got thrown into the deep end. I was walking in the water. It was up to my, you know, my waist, and then they took me out the pool and threw me in the deep end.
That was your coming out party.
10 feet. It had to be.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, if I don't perform, I'm a sink. It's gonna get ugly. Mm-hmm. I was in there with all the dogs in the division. So, sink or swim moment.
Arthur Abraham.
Man, one of the hardest punches I ever fought.
Really?
Yeah. One of the hardest punches I ever fought. He hit me with a jab, just one jab, straight shot in the first round. Bye. I said, everything they said about that power is real. Yeah. And I don't want to get hit with that again. And I start boxing, bro. I'm boxing. Beautiful, beautiful fight that night. I can't let you hit me with that again.
Mm.
I felt it.
That's the part of the sport, though.
First round.
Everybody ain't got that.
Yeah.
Everybody can't change up like that.
Yeah. Because that's one of them, you know what I'm saying? That's one of them, you can easily go into self-preservation mode quick and be like, bro, So I was smarter, but I was still trying to get mine, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's the difference between going to survival mode, but you would still fight.
Yeah,
you knew not to take a punch, but you still was engaged.
Yeah, I'm trying to win, bro. Yeah, like, I mean that when I say I'm trying to win. I'm trying to win.
Bad Chad Dawson.
Man, I got a lot of respect for Chad, man, and I feel bad about that fight to this day.
Yeah,
I feel bad about that fight.
Do that to him, though.
I had to.
He
said my name, but I feel bad because he got tricked.
Mm.
Gary Shaw is promoter. I'm sitting there watching the fight with him and Bernard Hopkins, the second one. And like, me and Chad wasn't close, but like, I watched him from a distance. James Prince was both of our managers, and I respected his fight game. You know, I'm like, man, I like Chad. Chad was not on my radar. And I'm sitting there with my wife, and he beat Bernard Hopkins the second time. And Max Kellerman, who you want to fight next? I want to fight Warder. I fight him at 168, 175, and I come to Oakland. Looked at my wife, I said, what? I hear Jay like, Jay said, yeah, I heard it. We gonna hold
him
to it too.
Like it too.
But he's a prime example about why you gotta think, man. He was so eager, and he said my name. His promoter, Gary Shaw, at that time, leaned in, call out Ward. Bad mistake, bro. Number one, that's cool if you feel like you wanna fight me. The best should want to fight the best. Mm-hmm. And I was at the top at that time in my weight class, and he had just beat Bernard a second time. He was at the top. But, dude, you negotiated the whole fight on HBO. And we held him to everything. So I knew he going to be weight drain coming down. Right? But I'm also not going to give you a pass either. And that's probably one of the best camps I ever had, because I had to come right with Chad.
Yeah.
He was that good.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about this in the book, probably like 3 weeks before the fight. Verz called me to his house. We had two houses side by side in training camp. He said, hey, man, I just got off the phone with James Prince. He said, Chad got knocked out in sparring. I said, knocked out? So he got knocked out by one of my old opponents, Edison Miranda. Edison, if he can't do nothing else, he can crack.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing I'm thinking, they gonna cancel the fight? He said, no, they trying to get it together. They not going to care. We had spies everywhere, man, when I'm fighting dude. Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We knew everything. I knew the days he took off.
Mm.
I knew the good days he had in sparring. I knew the bad days he had. So I thought the fight was going to get canceled. He said, it's not going to get canceled. I didn't say nothing the whole 3 weeks. It didn't leak, nothing. The whole week of the fight, we seeing each other, press conference, here, there, and at the weigh-in, we face to face. I still didn't say nothing to that moment. My team, John, his team, John, I looked at him, so we looking at each other. I leaned in, I said, hey, bro, I heard what happened in training camp. You better tighten it up tomorrow night. Mm. And I leaned back, that boy said, his whole face dropped, shoulder slumped. The fight was won right there.
Damn.
Done. All I got to do is execute tomorrow. The life went out of his body like, oh, you knew? Checkmate. And then I went there the night of the fight and took care of my business.
But you know who did that? Tank did the same thing to Ryan.
Yeah, I seen
that. You remember that?
I seen that.
He told him the same about his rib.
Yeah.
The day of the press conference, he told him right up there, I heard you got knocked. I heard you got knocked out. And heard you got a rib problem. And he told him that, right? And he knocked him out.
This war,
the same
man.
Punch.
Like, if your team is not, if your team don't have fillers out,
you're not working.
They're not doing their job.
Yeah.
Speak to, for the casuals, the importance of that weight drain coming up, coming down, yeah. and what that means, and how you can get back to that your weight the day of the fight. Like, speak to that.
And to touch with his question, how important those 175 to the weight, you know what I'm saying, those 7 pounds in between. Yeah.
Like, if you've been at a weight, like Chad was at 175 for a long time, you don't come back down. Your body's adjusted, you getting older, you don't come back down. You just don't. He should have made me come up. He should have challenged me and said, hey, you doing your thing on 168.
Come up.
Come up to 175 mm-hmm. if you want to fight a big dog. Mm-hmm. That's how you do it.
So he should have did the butt?
You don't go down in weight. So that's an issue. Even with Ryan, like, if I'm Ryan, I'm not taking that clause.
Yeah, right.
If I'm Tank, you can't knock him for taking that clause because you didn't have to take it. I don't think Ryan, as big of a draw as Tank is, Ryan was a big draw too. They don't do them numbers if they don't have each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan should have said, look, bro, we not doing that. That's when you use your social media. If they doing that in negotiations, look, bro, I want to make the fight, but this is what he trying to do.
Right.
He trying to weaken me. So.
And he got that kind of following, too, to move the needle.
That's my point.
Yep.
So him being just overly eager and trying to, you know, be too zealous to make the fight, he took a clause, and it probably hurt him. But I think it would have been the same result without it. You know, I like Ryan.
Right.
But, you know, Tank is a bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about the power and all of that, but Tank know how to set that power up. Very skillful. Underrated skills.
What you walk around at? Like when you was fighting, what you walk around at?
So when I was
when you're not in camp?
I'd be about 10 to 15.
Heavier?
Over.
So say you walk around at 168, but you're fighting at 147. And you train for 2 years and you to keep that weight down at 147 for 2 years. That's not going to take a toll on your body?
Yeah, it's going to start to get you. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But that's why your team got to know. Like,
because that's what E did after Ugas.
Yeah. It's a misnomer in boxing that, you know, if a dude has been at a weight class for a long time, he's the bigger guy. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. When I went up to 175, Kovalev had been there. He had a whole career at 175. And I started at 160, went to 168 and 175. I was the smaller guy on paper. But I already knew it. I knew your lifestyle. I knew how he got down. And I knew that, bro, you struggle to make weight. Mm. So you may look bigger, but you're not going to be stronger than me.
Yeah.
And when you struggle to make weight like that, right around that fifth, sixth round, you start to feel it. I don't care how great a shape you in, your body's saying, I can't. Boxing is the only sport where you drain yourself for 3 months.
Crazy.
Right? And then
to be your best.
Get 24 hours to rehydrate and then go be great the next night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everybody else get to walk around, get to play at whatever weight they walk around.
Right.
This is my playing weight, either football, basketball. We don't get that opportunity. Right. So there's no way you can strip your body down, Kovalev, Ryan Garcia, Chad Dawson, and get it back in 24 hours. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But guys get caught up in that stuff. Oh, he's bigger than me. Is he stronger, though? And Kovalev wasn't stronger. So, yeah, you stay at a weight a long time, it's going to get to you. It's even like Bud and EJ, right? Like, people keep talking about the 54 thing, and it's like them moving from 147 to 154. And my thing is, like, you don't think Bud going to be stronger at 154?
Right, right.
This is a two-way street.
Right.
I'm just trying to figure out, y'all talking about one side.
Yeah, right, right.
So, EJ may need to move up, but you don't think Bud going to be stronger?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
They gotta help me with that one.
Yeah, exactly. So this is another question. When they have that 24 hours to rehydrate, what do they do? Because you can't eat too much to get too heavy. Like, you don't want to be sluggish. Like,
yeah. Biggest
so
thing
what's
is,
so what's the best thing y'all do to rehydrate?
The biggest thing is hydration.
Just drinking.
Yeah, you gotta get that fluid. You gotta get the fluid in you.
Pedialyte, shit like that. Yeah.
Some people do that. Yeah. You got to get the fluid in you. And you also, but it's tough because it's like, it's two things going on. You hungry, but you're really thirsty. You more parched than anything. You thirsty. And it's hard because you're trying to drink the fluids, but then you're also trying to eat. It's a tough thing you got to do. So everybody got their own way on how they hydrate. My thing is like, get the fluids in me. And then when my stomach settle with the fluids after a couple hours, then I get some food in me. And you don't want to stuff yourself, but you got to eat. Because what you eating on the night, the food you eat the night before, that's what you're going to be fighting on the next night.
I'm going to read a quote here. I consider him one of the best fighters of all time. He had a sense of class about him, which I absolutely loved. He wasn't your typical boxer.
Yeah.
When you hear that from Michael Jordan, what does that make you think?
Man, that's big. Anything coming from Mike, that's Mike. You know, Mike don't comment on everybody.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, and that's one of the reasons why he signed me, and Mike don't sign everybody. So it's big, man. I appreciate it. And I'm comfortable, man, with the legacy I left, you know, in the ring.
Absolutely.
If they would have caught me a couple years before, they probably would have got the other guy they was looking for. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, to turn up and all of that. They probably would have got that. But, you know, for me, man, God have brought me through a lot. And I was still changing. Even when I turned pro, I was still in the process of becoming. You know what I'm saying? And I had seen a lot of that stuff growing up, you know. And I don't knock nobody in how they get down. But for me, I was like, man, I'm a fierce competitor. You're not going to step on me in no promotion or nothing like that, no press conference. But I'm going to try to do this in a classy way. You're going to feel right. My presence, but I'm going to try to do this in a classy way.
Your way.
The way I felt like God wanted me to do it.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, I knew my career was going to be over at a certain point in time. And I'm not trying to build this monster that I got to live with now
and retire. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I dropped my kids off at school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm able to still do business. Me and you talk about it all the time, mm-hmm. doing business and these projects and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have a life outside of this sport. And sometimes the sport wants you to crash out and they don't care what happens to you after it's over.
At all.
So I've been able to make a great living outside of boxing, being retired 6 years now, and I ain't took a through a punch in six years.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
That was tough. The goal.
Jordan, let's talk about Jordan, because I'm under Jordan too, but who's your rep?
Reggie was one of my reps, Mark Ravlin.
So for me, that was growing up not being able to afford him and have been sponsored by Jordan. That was the best feeling, one of the best ones I ever had in life.
Man, talk about it.
Getting them boxes?
Man. Hey, them elite. Listen, bro.
You still get them?
Yes.
Yeah, I need to find your rep because I ain't got a box in about 4 months.
Yeah, hey.
This motherfucker's back hunting
Larry,
the boxes.
Larry Miller, that's my brother, man. Larry said, man, you a Jordan athlete for life.
Yeah.
I said, Larry, I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to hold you to it.
I always hold him to it, too.
Yeah, but man, like, I don't know what it is with me in shoes. Always was a shoe person.
Mm-hmm.
I look at your shoes first, and I look at everything else.
You can tell a lot.
Some clean shoes tell a lot.
Bro, you can tell a lot.
I used to call my grandmother, Grammy, what shoes you got on? That's how I always was. And my dad used to tell me, he said, this boy ever get some money, he'll have a whole lot of shoes.
Dudes, and I do. Clean shoes is just like looking at a woman with open toe shoes on. Her feet ain't done.
Oh, they beat up.
That say a lot.
But that's also the culture in the Bay too. Like, we'll have some Jordans on and some regular jeans and a white t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As long as your shoes clean,
you
all right.
You good. You all right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's the same way today.
How did the conversation and the deal come together for the Jordan thing? And what was that first conversation with Mike like?
Did you almost pass out when you met him?
Man, I don't really like get in awe with a lot of people.
I almost passed out.
And not from a disrespectful standpoint. I just, you know, it's like, oh, that's so-and-so, that's mm-hmm. cool. But Mike is different.
Mike is different.
Mike got an aura about him. Like, and he not even trying, he just Mike.
Yeah, he ain't trying.
So, they had just, you know, I was on their radar and it was a lot of, you know, back and forth and they had sent me a couple boxes and stuff like that. And it was a lot of talking, but you know, it was a couple years of that. And then we finally locked in a deal. But Mike, man, he got aura, man. He walk in the room.
Feel it.
If he walk in the room right now, everything gonna stop.
He don't want nothing fake around him.
Yeah.
He don't want no fans around. He want everything family and genuine. He a normal dude, bro.
Yeah.
He's super normal.
He talk crazy when he competing to this day. Whether he golfing or, you know, he like to play cards and stuff. Man, I got a lot of love for Mike, man. A lot of love. When I was getting ready to do the documentary, my brother, Deontay Thompson, we grew up together, and he worked with Beast Mode Productions. And he was like, bro, we got to get Mike. I was like, bro, I'm not calling Mike. I'm not doing it. So he was going back and forth for weeks. And I said, bro, I'm not calling Mike. Bro, he said, bro, just call him. You got to be able to do stuff like this if we're going to make this doc do what it do. So, all right, bro, I'll call him. So I called Larry Miller. I said, Larry, man, look, I know Mike busy. So I did that whole thing. He said, let me make a phone call and see what's up. He called me right back. He said, Mike wants you to call him head up. So I called him. Man, we flew out to North Carolina to the facility. We knocked it out. That was the easiest interview we did. That's how Mike is.
So he did us at NASCAR.
Mm-hmm. We still ain't got to sit down with him, but that's how he did us at NASCAR. Yeah.
Like if Mike Rock
almost.
Yeah.
A little different, but yeah.
We ain't talked to him like that. But
we still waiting on the interview, but he talked to us.
We got the number and all
he
that.
Said he's fucking with us. Yeah. He but said he's coming. He just ain't came yet.
But this how cold Mike is, though. So we all in a boardroom at the facility. He come in there scanning shoes.
Wow. Oh, you bet not have nothing on.
Oh, you know I was good. You know I was good.
Mike Bibb, he killed
Mike Bibb. One of my guys had on some Adidas, though.
Oh, no. He don't care if it's Gucci or whatever. If it ain't Jordan, it's not.
They take, like, people that's in that industry, oh, it's serious.
Yeah, he take that serious.
So he came in, what's up, Mike, everybody? You know everybody? What's up with your man? I'm like, what you mean? I said, bro, I told you, bro, not to wear them. We can get him right, man, but yeah, your boy good, but he ain't right. He ain't right for that.
You make him take his shoes off?
Almost.
Damn near.
Almost.
Bro, we went to NASCAR. How the NASCAR team,
they
got on all
head to toe.
A1 Jordans. I'm talking about changing tires.
They take it serious, bro.
It's crazy.
They take it serious.
Scuffing the fuck
out
of
him. He take care
of
everybody, though. That's dope.
Any truth that he would text you ahead of fights sometimes or before fights?
Yeah. He just sent me voice memos, all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not comparing myself to Mike, but, man, we got a lot of the same juice and mentality mm-hmm. in terms of, like, it's win or die. It ain't no win or lose, win or die.
Period.
And people be like, oh, it's a little, come on, man, you're taking it too far. No, that's how I felt. Like, I used to think in training camp on them tough days, like, man, what's Sunday night, late night gonna feel like after this fight? Sunday morning when I wake up, like, I'm thinking about looking at my wife and my kids, and I remember the last loss I had and what I felt like.
You said at 14, though.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
John Revish from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Country.
We was in Lenexa, Kansas at the Nationals, Silver Gloves Nationals. And we in opposite brackets, 14, 15-year-old division. So he was 15, so he's a little bit older. And I'm outboxing people doing my thing, and it's three rings. So you kind of see, like, man, you fighting, but then the dude you might fight, he fighting in this ring right after. So I'm watching him the whole week, and he knocking dudes out. Bang, bang, they going out. I'm like, man. And I remember seeing him around the hotel, and I didn't tell Verge this, but that's the last time I ever got intimidated and allowed myself to get beat before I got in the ring.
That mental side.
And I wasn't spooked, like, oh, my God, but I was like, bro, he kind of strong. Like, I had a little hesitation about me. It was a close decision. Of course, I thought I won. I should have got the nod. But deep down, I knew when I was going home, I'm on a Southwest flight. Had a whole row to myself, curled up in the ball. I remember that. I remember looking at Verge's face and looking at my assistant trainer's face. I remember being home that week and, oh, man, you lost, huh? I remember that. And I never wanted to feel that again. And I made up my mind that day, nobody will ever beat me before they get in the ring with me again. They're going to have to earn it. I let your appearance and I let you being a little older and the way you was taking care of your business get me. Never again.
Mm-hmm.
Never again.
Favorite Jay?
11s, for sure.
Really? You an 11 guy?
I love 11s, but I also love the ones too.
You the first person I heard say the 11 guy.
I love the ones because I can dress them up and dress them down.
What you got on now, fours?
I'm gonna give you a chance. What's your favorite?
Fours, threes, and fours.
And I love fours too.
Yeah, threes
love
and fours. Fours. Too. Yeah, threes and fours.
Yeah, I love all the ones I couldn't afford when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I couldn't get them.
The threes and fours, that's the dope boys growing up. They had them on the block. That's the ones we always wanted.
Yeah. The ones I couldn't afford, them the ones I gravitate to the most.
You ever consider using some retros and shape them into boxing shoes?
Yeah, I would love to, man. Like, we took a couple of runs at it with the Jordan team, man, and we wasn't able to, like, get something that can go out. But, like, I got that kind of mind, man. Like, I think about, like, that kind of stuff all the time because I'm a creative type, and it's a need for that kind of stuff mm-hmm. in boxing. Like, it's some shoes out there. Most of them are not great. You got a few that's like, they okay. Mm-hmm. But we need something that's, like, a standard test of time. It's like Roy's boxing boot. You know, that he had with Jordan. That thing lasted mm-hmm. over a decade strong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I might be putting something out like that one day.
Yeah. Come on, Mike. You hear him?
Quick question. What's your relationship with Monte?
Monte Ellis?
Yeah.
I ain't talked to him in years, but man, that's my boy.
Because when we was playing,
yeah,
he was going was my, to, yeah, y'all brother. Had a good relationship. Yeah.
We had the same lawyer at that time, Jeff Freed.
That's what it was. Okay, that's
so,
what it was.
So we connected, man. That's my boy, man. He always showed love.
Did Monte he ever get involved Ellis. In boxing, like as far as on the management side?
Nah,
or
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think he might have had a young fighter. I don't know if he, you know, a kid from D.C.
Because I remember one time Dusty he said he Harrison. Was trying to get into it.
Yeah, but I don't know if he actually ever did, though. But he always showed love, man.
Bro, he's doing great. Right now,
yeah,
he's in Dallas. Great father yeah. with his family. His son and his daughter doing great in sports.
Yeah,
he's doing good right now, dog.
Yep.
Yeah, his son looks just like really? Plays just like him and all that.
You don't hear much from him, though.
Nah, that's what I'm saying, though. He out the way.
He don't want to be.
Bro, out the way. We've been trying to get him on the show.
He out the way.
Really?
He'll look at the message and just talk about something else.
Really?
Yeah, he don't like to talk, man.
He originally from where? Louisiana?
Mississippi. Mm.
But the way you know, we all have a little, especially you know, and he has that right. The way his career ended. The game didn't appreciate him the way they should have on his way out. You know what I'm saying? They kind of pushed him out and treated him. You know, the game didn't do him right going out.
I remember that.
So I can see why he kind of stayed away from stuff.
I remember that.
You know what I'm saying? Because he deserved more.
Yeah.
2014, you have an unfortunate setback. You got to sit out a year due to some legal dispute with your promoter.
Janky promoters.
Can you share what happened and how often this kind of happens with fighters?
I would say this, you know, I can't get too deep into it. And it was really 2 years.
Oh, really?
Okay. I think the simplest way I could put it, man, is I was fighting for what I believed in. And I'm the type of person that when, you know, my mind is made up and I feel like it's something I need to do, I'm gonna go for it. And but it's really one of the hardest times in my life, man, because I can't really talk. It's open litigation.
Mm-hmm.
Promoters, they got the media. So you see headlines like, oh, Ward would rather fight in the courtroom than fight in the ring. Like, what sense do that make?
They controlling the narrative.
The money going out, no money coming in. Like, you think I want to do this? And the media made it into, I'm being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being a bully. I want more money. And I'm wasting my career. It's like, dude, do you realize that, like, fighting is what I do? Do you realize that this is how I provide for my family? And how what y'all saying makes no sense? And y'all never took the time to like get to the bottom of the situation. And the few times that they did, I would explain it to them. And we just don't get it. And I just realized at that time, y'all not gonna get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not the same. Like, you have a certain mindset and I have a different mindset. And even to this day, people are trying to give me credit for my career. But you know, you lost 2 years. It's like, nah, I ain't lose 2 years. I gained 2 years. Like, I preserved my body 2 years. I learned a lot, I grew a lot, and I got my respect at that negotiating table.
Mm-hmm.
So the next deal that I had with Roc Nation, it's front and center the whole way, negotiating through. So they don't see that kind of stuff because boxing at that time was a lot of, you know, still a lot of writers involved. And so like, that's new media now, so it's different. But
they probably didn't want to see that side anyway because their side sold the papers, pushed the image that wasn't necessarily true. Yeah,
that's not
true.
Good for business.
Right.
That's not good for business. Like, just shut up and fight.
Right, shut up and dribble. Yep, same
and
thing.
I'm just not built like that. You know, like I studied the game and I would ask questions like, Bird, why do fighters always end up with no money? Why they always messed up? And he would try to explain it to me. And I just knew, even before I really knew what I was saying, like, I don't wanna do that, I wanna be different. But it take courage though, because when you making that kind of fight, you're not just fighting the individual, you're fighting the media.
Mm-hmm.
You fighting the narrative. And the deal I did with Roc Nation, I was with them 3 years before I retired. I made more money in that 3 years than I did the 10 years previously. And I've heard people even to this day, well, you know, the Roc Nation thing didn't work out the way you thought it was going to. And I'm like, you sure about that? So it's all these little narratives and stuff that you got to fight through. But what I love about the game is that my peers, the younger ones, the ones my age, and even the older ones, they get it and they respect it. And that's really
all that matters.
Yeah. It's not about the media. It's not about you YouTubers. It's not about you writers. Y'all are gonna have y'all perspective. Mm-hmm. For any sport, y'all know this. What your peers say about you,
matters most.
That's really matters most, and that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they gonna keep it real.
Right.
The media, y'all high and low, hot and cold, depending on the day.
We got someone in here, DeMarcus Cousins. Just that narrative of issue, problem, this, but you asked players around the league, he was a killer.
And can go in the league right now and be a top five big man right now in the league. But the way they put it is why he's not playing, because they controlled the narrative for so long.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It sucks.
Shout out Boogie.
Yeah.
You in the building. You spoke to Roc Nation. Speak to that relationship, how that came about, and what made Jay different.
I followed Jay, the business side of his life, for years. You know what I mean? And I said this in the doc, that everything he touched seemed to be successful. And, you know, when we got through with the lawsuit, you know, Jay said, Roc Nation. And I was like, what you mean? I didn't know about the sports part. I mean, I knew they were agents in the game, but mm-hmm. I didn't know about the boxing part of the sports agency. He said, they're getting in the game. Jay's a big boxing fan, and he wants to sign you. So that's what started it. And like I said, man, me, Jay, and my lawyer, who's my good friend and my brother, Josh Dubin, man, we negotiated that thing together. And, you know, Desiree Perez and Juan and Jay-Z, man, I appreciate them. You know, for believing in me. We believed in each other because I was taking a risk on them too. And it was the right thing that I needed coming off that lawsuit.
Because it was new, not to cut you off, but their division was new, right? Mm-hmm. The
boxing division was new. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to go back to the old, same old thing that I had just come out of.
Right.
You know, I respected that time and season of my life, but it was time for something different. It was time for something new, something innovative, and Roc Nation was the answer. Mm-hmm. Mm.
I've been honored to be in this boxing space now, getting accepted by a lot of the boxers, you know, being a basketball player, and I'm honored to be in the space. And I got a show, which I'd love to have you on, coming up, and called Fight Times. I had a lot of champions on my show, and we talked about the politics of boxing. Mm-hmm. Give me your take on the politics of boxing, and what would you change to make the sport better?
I would say the politics, there's politics like it is in every sport. Couple things. I think you got to learn how to navigate the politics. You can't fight every battle. It's a time to speak, and it's a time to be quiet and watch and process and digest what's going on. And then you got to get to a certain point where politics, opinions, narratives, they don't move you. Like, I'm a firm believer, and I got this concept from my pastor. He said, man, I used to call him, man, they hating on me, man. I just fought a great fight. They saying this. He said, who? I said, the media. He said, man, stop giving these people so much credit in your life. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what you mean? He like, they can't do nothing that God don't allow them to do. Mm-hmm. And if he's allowing something to happen, it's for a purpose and a plan to build you and teach you and grow you. Mm-hmm. So it shifted my focus where instead of y'all hating, y'all blocking, you can't block me. And that's not an arrogant statement. That's a fact. You can't do nothing that God won't allow you to do.
Right.
And if he's allowing it, I gotta ask, okay, God, what do I need to get out of this? Mm-hmm. So yes, it's politics. You gotta learn how to navigate that. Like I said, you gotta know how to move with the politics. But at the same time, at the end of the day, man, you can write what you wanna write. You can say what you wanna say. The purpose of my life is gonna be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. The only thing that can stop it is me if I crash out. Mm-hmm. But if I stay the course, I'm gonna let this work for me. And I'm gonna forgive y'all in the process because y'all saying stuff about my family, y'all saying stuff about me. Mm-hmm. Hey man, I forgive you. Now I'm not gonna do an interview with you.
Right.
But I forgive you, man. I'm not gonna hold that against you. But y'all not gonna stop. Like, I can give you a list right now of things that the media said was not gonna happen in my career, or question marks that they had, or, you know, things that they say, oh, he's got an amateur style, he can't take a punch, he's not gonna retire undefeated, he's not gonna beat this guy, nobody wants to see him fight, oh, he's boring, all these things. And I just kept chipping, kept plowing away, kept chipping, and it got to the point where when y'all finally gave me just due and respect universally,
I was gone.
See y'all later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See y'all later.
Yeah.
Because I really wasn't in it for y'all's approval. Mm-hmm. I had a mission and a timetable. My time is up. So I beat the dude the second time that y'all didn't think I was gonna beat the first time. But since y'all had questions the first time, let me put this stamp on it right here, and I'm out. Mm. Not best fighter in the world. I'm gone.
Drop the motherfucking mic. Right?
Mic drop.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey,
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Callie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me!
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on Storybutton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What fight do the world need to see?
Right now?
Yes.
Ooh, man. That's a good one. I want to see Canelo. I wouldn't mind Canelo fighting Terrence or Benavidez. You got two options. You can go somebody in your weight class, or you can try to pick on the smaller guy, Terrence Crawford.
That smaller guy.
But I'm not betting against Terrence right now with against nobody. Nobody not doing it. I would love to see Tank fight Shakur or Devin.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's probably a little early,
yeah.
A little bit more seasoning. I think that'll make the most sense from a financial standpoint. And
I want to see Tank Shakur.
Yeah.
That's the fight.
And they didn't rumble a lot in sparring.
That's the fight.
They didn't rumble a lot in Spawn.
Yep.
You know, so, but I really want to see Bud go out the way he want to go out. And he can go out and I don't know if they're going to do the rematch, him and Errol.
Yeah.
So they can run that back. But if they don't, I would love to see Bud get Canelo and then ride off in the sunset.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to see the rematch with Spence. That was brutal.
That's a lot of money for both of them.
That's a ton of money.
That's a ton of money for both of them. I think they got to do the rematch. Regardless how, if it's the same thing, so what? It's a great business move for them.
Yeah, but still, that's taking, that feel like you taking
we
it.
We all feel the same
like
way.
That.
We don't want to see it.
It's going to take some years off his life, bro.
No. All the stuff he has been through has took a toll on him. So this next fight is not going to do no more damage than his already. He's, you know what I'm saying? He's already damaged.
I don't know.
But it can, though.
Yeah, so come on now.
And it will.
A new punch. So? Come on, man. That shit was brutal, bro.
I mean, if the fight go the same way, I just the same damage.
No.
But it's again, it's happening again.
That's a whole nother layer.
Yes, I'm saying, it's happening again. The same kind of damage happening again.
I just don't see it being that, I don't see it going, I honestly see Bud winning still, but I don't see it being that dominant.
That's another car accident.
Yeah, right, face first.
EJ, he know one way. Like he's a fighter. He gonna bring it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter, he ain't gonna make no excuse, he gonna bring it.
That's how I feel.
Right, he gonna bring
That's
it.
That's my attitude, so you won't understand what I'm saying.
But look, Bud no one way too. So that's two Mack trucks.
Two hard head
having another accident, yeah. Another collision.
Yeah, you gotta knock me out.
But that thing gonna
and
linger,
he will.
Though. That thing gonna stay with you though.
Hey.
Right.
We stopped watching the night of the fight. All right, man, I'm moving on. It was a good fight.
He got
that
live
punishment
with it.
Sit with you.
Come on, man. He gotta live
I
with
got
it.
Hit by a car and got up and shooting again. So I ain't got no understanding.
Okay.
Well, different.
But you can't make me understand.
If
that,
you would have got hit with that car three more times, it would have been a little different.
Last time it knocked all your fronts out. I would have got hit by the car again, though.
Let me just chime in as the guy who, you know,
lived it.
Took a few punches in his yeah. day and dished out a whole lot of punches.
Yeah.
Yeah,
man.
You're gonna feel that.
Got to.
And here go the thing, they getting older. The miles, they racking up.
Got kids, you want to be able to do shit with your kids.
Here go the thing, bro.
That's just like saying you retired, but somebody run up on you and disrespect you, ain't going to fight them.
Oh, them hands still work, for sure. They still work. That's automatic,
though.
That's
my point. That's all I'm saying.
But I'm saying, like, but he...
You still going.
As a competitor, listen, if I'm in Ariel's position, I'm going to really need some counseling to not take that next fight. I'm going to need my pastor, my wife, my brothers... People, I need y'all to really sit me down and explain, like, help me understand why this is not a good idea to tell. I understand about my health, I understand that, but he beat me and he beat me in such a way I got to get that back. So I understand that from a competitive standpoint. But me being out the game 6 years now, me being a big brother in the game, me knowing how that punishment can start soaking in, especially when you get older, I don't want to see it from that standpoint. This ain't no disrespect to EJ. I love mm-hmm. that dude mm-hmm. and I
we
love Bud.
Do.
They both my brothers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we both love them both.
But I'm going to keep it 100.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go through that again. EJ is good with his money, took care of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He living his life. He done been through a lot with the car accident, yep. Multiple, two of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them had him in a hospital, the other one he walked away from.
Mm-hmm.
And he fought after that. And mm-hmm. then he fought Bud.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we talking about quality of life, bro.
Yeah, we don't have no understanding in Texas, though. Sorry, y'all.
But I understand what you're saying. That's why I say I'm gonna need counseling
I'm
and not take
out
the
on
fight.
My shield, but that's how I live my life. I'm going out. If I go out the dumb way, it's the way I want it to go.
Yeah, but
I'm not barring nothing. I'm standing in front of any and everybody.
So you, EJ, you take
win
the
or
fight,
lose, win or lose. I'm not backing down from nothing. In life, nothing, nobody.
So if they say, hey, man, you can take this fight, make half the money, and then maybe. See how you feel, and then maybe come back to Bud. You gonna do that?
I would do. I mean, the business decision, but I'm still taking the fight. What I'm saying,
you're not gonna not take the fight.
I'm not gonna not take the fight.
I respect it.
I'm not, and that's just how I live my life with anything.
What you gonna do, Matt? You EJ?
Come on, man. The quality of life. I love my kids. I love to be able to talk.
That's
I
why
love
the show
to be
work.
Able to do all this other
that's
shit.
That's why we work.
You gonna make it?
Yeah.
That's why we work.
You gonna
that's
make
why
a business decision?
Yeah, best of both worlds.
You go ahead and crash out. I'll carry
yeah,
you.
I'm gonna crash out. Yeah. I'm gonna crash. I'm gonna be happy with it too.
But I understand. I understand.
I respect it. I definitely respect it.
I'm a rider that don't check the mileage.
I see it, but at the same time, I feel like shit.
Till that light come on. Huh?
We in our mid.
It ain't coming on.
We in our mid 40s. Like to me, I'm thinking like life after basketball, life after boxing is way different. You know what I mean? And you see people who've been punched drunk and have issues now.
You seen basketball players that can't walk.
It's real.
Anyway,
you, know what I'm saying?
So, you once said, when I walk away, I want to have a body of work, not just in the ring, but as a man, that young fighters can point at and say, man, I could pull off something from, I could pull something from that dude. Anybody in the game that remotely reminds you of yourself today?
Shakur.
Yeah, Shakur probably the most.
By far.
Yeah.
Damn not identical, bro.
When I hear his mind, like that dude really, like one of his problems, he don't leave the gym. Like, I got to a point where it's like, bro, I'm not sparring unless there's some money on the line, unless I got a fight. I'll go hit the bag, I hit the mitts, but I'm not taking no punches unless it's training camp time.
Burn yourself out.
This dude be sparring. Like, bro, I did 16 rounds today. Why? He loves it that much. So when I'm around him, he reminds me of my younger self, the one that just loved boxing before the business side came in. And, you know, people keep questioning him being a dog and all of that, but he got plenty dog in him. He got plenty dog in him, but he's still trying to figure it out. But for a fighter like Shakur, all these fighters, really, not just Shakur, they trying to figure it out in front of the whole world in real time. So you're going to see the bad nights and you're going to see the good nights. So he still got a lot left that he's going to accomplish, and I'm excited to see it. But yeah, Shakur is probably the one that I say, man, he reminds me of myself probably more than anybody.
By far the best defensive fighter I've seen since you in Floyd.
Yeah.
By far, it's not even close.
Yeah.
We just talking about him. Who's the most skilled fighter today? Bud?
Bud is definitely one of them, for sure. Tank Shakur, Devin, Boots.
Boots is Jerron, one of my favorite.
It's a lot of them. It's a lot of them. And they're skillful in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But somebody that, like, I can bet the house on is Bud. Because me and him, we so much alike in our mentality. Like, soon as I see this dude, he come in the room or I come in the room, we start arguing about basketball, wrestling, anything, bro. Like, man, you looking small. What you mean I'm looking small? You looking small? Like, it's just that, like, you gotta really hurt that dude to turn him away and to try to stop him from doing what he wanna do. So, skillful, yes, but this, and
I'm
this,
lying, yeah.
It's different, man. There's not a lot of guys like that out there currently. There's a lot of guys that talk it. But until you get in that real fire, I'm not saying a guy, you fighting a guy you should beat. I'm saying a guy that it's a 50-50 matchup. We don't really know what you have. You don't even really know what you have. And I've seen Bud tested. I've seen Bud tested outside the ring, things that they said about him, how they treated him, narratives that were put everywhere about him, and I seen him fight through it. I seen him push through it. I seen him navigate. I seen him, you know, like Bud is a business. He's a business, but he's a businessman. And Bud just don't talk about a lot of his stuff. So now everybody love him. But Bud been that guy. Bud has been marketable. Bud has been a great fighter. Bud, people questioning his resume. Anybody they put him in there with, he handled him and did what he was supposed to do. He wasn't ducking no smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I say the same thing for EJ. Like I remember talking to Errol years ago. Like, bro, what y'all gonna do? You and Bud gonna fight? He was like, bro, listen, I'm not ducking him. I just want to get all the belts and have the leverage that I need at the negotiating table, and I'm gonna fight him. And he did that. So, like, Bud, EJ, I'm not really impressed by skill. It's cool to see it. Like, oh, he's skillful. When I see that other side, like, bro, he's different. He a dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that get me out my seat.
Mm-hmm.
And that don't mean you going punch for punch. It just mean that when you need to be that guy, you can be that guy.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of people like that in the game today. It's a lot of talking, but not a lot of walking.
Yeah. And Bud is definitely that. How true was it, or is it even true at all that you and Canelo was about to fight? Is that any truth to it?
Man, the only reason why me and Canelo was brought up in the same conversation is because we fought a common opponent, Sergey Kovalev.
Kovalev, yeah.
My name and his name never crossed paths during my career, even after I beat Kovalev. Nobody said nothing about that. And that's probably the closest I ever came to coming back is after when he was fighting Kovalev, I said, if you call my name,
I'm there.
Yeah. And post-fight press conference, I'm going to talk to my team, and he just didn't do it, so... Nothing ever materialized, but that's probably the closest that I ever came to feeling like, man, I may want to pick up the phone and call Jay and see if it's something there. But it's just a common opponent, bro. It ain't no beef. It ain't no funk. It ain't nothing. He's never said my name in a disrespectful way. He's never said that he wanted to fight me.
He ain't that type of dude.
Nah, it's really just the fans.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You retired 32-0, top of the game, number one pound for pound fighter in the world. Why did you feel like it was time to walk, and was that a tough walk to make?
Yeah, I wanted to retire really 2-3 years before I did it.
Ooh.
You know, like I started hearing the R word come up in my conversation. I'm like, dang. But I still had to drive. But I was like, man, I'm like my father. I'm an all or nothing type of person with my preparation. And you know, just you start, you know, you missing stuff with your kids. I'm in training camp 6 months out the year. You know, my body's starting to break down a little bit because I'm grinding the way I'm grinding in training camp. And I just wanted my freedom back. I'm like, man, I don't know how much longer I want to do this. You know, I'm stacking my money. So I'm like, all right, I think I'm good on that front. And it just got to the point, I thought I was done after Kovalev won. You know, based on how the training camp went with the knee, everything, and then winning the fight. Some people felt like I won, some people felt like I lost. It was just like, why am I still doing this? Like, what's the point? And I stayed out of the gym probably for 3 months, didn't touch a gym, and I had never done that. And I didn't miss it. So I was like, man, this is, what is this? Like, this, I ain't never felt like this before. And I went and talked to my pastor because he had the same walk. He played 6 years in the NFL for the Raiders, and then he walked away and became a pastor, never came back. I said, man, and I thought he was going to co-sign how I was feeling. I'm like, man, I ain't feeling it. I ain't got no desire to be in the gym. And he was like, I think I can see you doing one more. He's like, you ain't got to. He said, gotta be with you whether you do or don't, but think about it. I think I can see you doing one more. And I remember being upset, like, man, like every time I get ready to try to talk about retiring, it's always the goalposts get moved. Mm-hmm. One more year. Now it's one more fight. And I remember leaving there kind of dejected, like, man, that's crazy. But he was right though. I had to seal my legacy the way that I did. Now they always gonna have something to talk about, but for me, I had to make sure there was no doubt. What happened the first fight and leave no doubt the second fight. And I felt like I was going to retire before the second fight was over. Like, you know, that was in my mind. Got some rest a month or two after the fight. And I started like, man, well, maybe, you know, I could do a couple more. Like, let me, all these deals, my Jordan deal came up. They was getting ready to, you know, pay me. My HBO deal came up. They wanted to do a commentating deal and a boxing deal. So it was a lot of money on the table. And I'm like, man, well, maybe a couple more. And then I woke up one day and I was like, I don't want to do it no more. And I remember I had tears in my eyes. It was like early in the morning. And my wife was like, she didn't really say nothing. I remember thinking like, girl, I'm like spilling my heart right now. You ain't got nothing for me? She was like, look, man, take the kids to school. We'll talk later. And we ended up talking that night. Now, mind you, she's the one that was always telling me, it ain't time yet, babe. It ain't time yet. During the lawsuit period, man, if this lawsuit keep going on, man, I'm a retire on my terms. Babe, it ain't time yet. That night, she heard me. She said, man, I ain't never heard you sound like this before. She said, I think the decision is already made. And I never heard, she never co-signed that. And that was the first time she ever co-signed it. And I got on the phone immediately and start undoing stuff. Cause my HBO deal, I was getting ready to announce it in 2 days. A new three-year deal. All my deals I was getting ready to announce. Jordan, I renewed. HBO, I renewed. And there was a couple other ones on the table too. And I remember just, I was like, for real? And I didn't waste no time. I got on the phone with my lawyer and we just started undoing stuff, man. And I haven't looked back. Now you asked me a question earlier about it, you know, how hard it was. It's probably one of the hardest things outside of losing my father that I've ever had to deal with. And for a lot of reasons, because I've had to retire multiple times. Like, it ain't just that day that I retire. It's that drive, that hunger, all that stuff. Y'all know it don't go away. Mm-mm. But what I learned is I got to redirect it.
Find somewhere else.
Yep. And what I also knew, I've been doing this my whole career, but it got, you know, more or less confirmed after my career. It's like boxing is what I did. You know, it was a you know, a teacher for me.
It's not who I am.
Like, but it's not completely who I am. You know, like I said, I'm a minister and a youth pastor, and like that's my real call. That's what I'm really called to do. You know, speaking is one of my gifts. You know, motivating people, helping people, encouraging people. Like, that's one of my gifts. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I'm put on this earth to do. So it's really just trying to embrace that and understanding I have my time. Mm-hmm. And just embracing a young life, man, and encouraging a young life and trying to help them as best I can. That's what's fulfilling to me.
Love it. Home stretch, we almost finished. 2021, the Boxing Hall comes calling. Legendary class, yourself, Floyd. Yeah. Vladimir Klitschko, Leila Ali,
man,
to name a few. What was that like?
Man, it was surreal. It was unreal. It bring tears to my eyes because, like, that class was crazy. Like, I was upset at first because it got delayed because of COVID. But then when I looked at the end, I'm like, bro, look at all these people I'm getting inducted with. Like, my big three, all the people I just named to you, they're in there. I grew up watching Leila. I grew up watching Ann Wolf coming up. Like, I think Shane was in that class too. I couldn't believe it, man. Like, I'm the baby in the bunch. I think I'm the second youngest fighter ever next to Wilfred Benitez that ever got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I'm sitting up here on the stage and it's like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I know I earned the right to be there, but it's still hard to believe. And I think the hardest part for me that week was just like really just allowing myself to enjoy it and embrace it, because I don't celebrate my wins very well. My whole life has always been, yeah, you did that. We're going to enjoy it for a couple of days. We got to get back up. You know, we got to get back to work. And it's just, I always just push my accomplishments to the side and just keep grinding. This was one of the times that I had to really smell the roses.
Got to.
And embrace what was happening. But it was surreal being in a room with them people. It was crazy.
Winning a gold, hell of an experience. Can you talk about that in Athens?
Man, it was special. It was very, very special. And part of the reason is because I almost missed it. That moment we talked about, that barely came, bro. That barely came. Like, I barely got myself together in time to qualify. Because at that time, like, normally you win in the United States and you're on the team and you just go to the Olympics. But they changed the rules where you get on the team and then you got to qualify your weight class by doing another tournament and then you can go. Everything fell into place right on time. And I had just lost my father, fresh out the streets. I just gave my life to God, trying to figure it out. Got two young kids at home. It was crazy. We had just gone to war in 2004. So we had like a Secret Service agent with us the whole time. Like, it was crazy. And man, to look up and be the last man standing on that podium, it's just surreal. But that's something we had planned since I've been a kid. Like, it don't sound normal to normal people, but like for us, like a gold medal was like realistic. We was like, man, we got 8 years and we gonna win a gold medal. It was never about bronze or silver. And to like actually do it, and to do it coming off of what I just came off of. So even my teammates, I was talking to Andre Durrell the other day. He's like, bro, now I understand why you was in your room a lot of times reading your Bible. Now I get why you wasn't doing certain things. Now I get why you were so focused, because he understands the story behind the journey now. Like, bro, I almost lost my life. And a lot of my teammates, they young like I was. So they like, all they got, you know, they probably got life going on, but it's really about boxing. Dude, I almost lost my life. And God gave me a second chance. So you seen somebody that was a little bit mature and was trying to lock in on God and then fight for my dream. Mm-hmm. So I was a little bit different. Now they understand why, because they got the story.
Oh. Did you ever think you'd be a stuntman?
Never. Never.
Pulling stunts in Creed. How did that happen?
Never, man. Ryan Coogler, man. That's my brother. Yeah, mm-hmm. Ryan Coogler, man. That's my brother. We have been hearing about each other. We come from the same, you know, we both from Oakland. And we finally connected. And he was like, bro, I got a role for you. I'm like, what you mean you got a role? Like, I don't act. And he was like, I got a role for you. He took the BART, which is a train station for us in the Bay Area, all the way to Cheesecake Factory. We sat there. He broke down the whole script. I'm like, bro, he said, I had you in mind, bro. This person is from Oakland, same career background, gold medal, all this stuff. And man, it's one of the best experiences of my life. Super hard work, those 12-hour days. Mm-hmm. But it's dope. Like, you get your script the night before, and you get to your trailer. You got your outfit for that day. You got all these, you know, these cast members and all these extras and stuff. They in the arena. So it's like they dressed up like it's a fight night. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Like, I loved it, man. I want to do more acting.
Speak to his greatness, though.
Man, Ryan Coogler is different, bro. He's different. When I was on set, I don't know how old Ryan was at that time, but man, he had to be probably in his 20s, you know? And I'm seeing a young dude manage a room with all these middle-aged people, different walks of life, different races. I'm seeing him command it. Then he'll slide up on me when I'm in the room. You good? I'm like, bro, I'm good, bro. Like, are you? He said, no, I'm good, bro. Like, he wasn't shaving. He wasn't cutting his hair, nothing. Because, like, this is my opportunity. I went from Fruitvale Station to this. Mm-hmm. I was given a Rocky franchise. I can't lose. Mm-hmm. Man, I got so much respect for that dude. He would call me at 2 in the morning after we shot. Like, bro, you good? I'm like, bro, I'm good. Like, why you not sleep? Bro, I'm just trying to make sure you know you good, bro. I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate you. Mm-hmm. The charisma he has, the mindset he has, and how he moves, man, it's different, bro. He's very quiet, bro, but that dude got a wealth of knowledge. And He got respect. That whole the whole room, he commanded respect from the whole room. So what he did with Black Panther and all that stuff, I wasn't surprised. I was just proud.
We I got a chance to go up on the Disney lot when he was first shooting the first one, and we just walked around and looked around, and there was nobody to look anything like us. Yeah. He was taking me to the different stages and different spots, and I'm just like, bro, this shit is unbelievable, bro. So shout out to
so
homie,
proud
man.
Of that dude,
special,
man.
Special dude. Big Warriors fan, obviously from the Bay. Any memorable moments as a Warrior fan?
Yeah, man. You know, the whole run they had, you know, when they were still at Oracle Arena in Oakland, man, I was right there.
It front was different.
People don't understand.
Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, my bad.
People don't understand, though. It's just what Oracle used to be about,
all of
though.
Us.
What Oracle used to be about.
Don't do that, bro.
Yeah, my bad,
bro. You was around when you
forgive
come on
me,
out.
Bro. Come forgive on now. Me. Forgive me. He was in that thing. He was in that thing.
But Oracle was a character in itself. You know what I mean?
It was.
You could smell the weed at the top of the building.
Oh,
like it was Oracle was different.
Bro, I used to, we had all these executives at the fight, HBO, all this stuff, Showtime too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the locker room, bro. I'm looking out, I look through the curtain. I'm like, bro, they hotboxing the whole
arena. The whole fight. The whole arena. Like,
come on, bro. Like,
don't go to tank fights.
Man. Bro, listen to me.
Don't go to tank fights.
I was in the Lions den. It's crazy.
Man.
I'm like, man, you know how these people looking at us? Crazy.
But
they came and they supported,
man.
Yeah,
they always
that's
gonna
how
show
they
up.
Do it.
But nah, that's why they call it rural code, though, because it's different. Like, a lot of my opponents, they man, what's your toughest fight? The fight that you, they always go back, oh, was when I went to Oakland. They can't really explain it, but they didn't like it.
It's different. Steph Curry attended a few of your fights, got a chance to build a personal relationship. We talked about Steph.
Good brother, man. Very humble. As you know, he just like, he's a superstar, you know, and just doesn't act like one, which is very, very rare. And he keep getting better. I'm just proud of him, man, just the way he has lived his life on and off the court. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing to witness.
His dad molded him to be who he is. Mm. You know what I'm saying? He's exactly who he's supposed to be, bro. Because his dad's such a stand-up guy. His dad wasn't an all-star, wasn't one of the best. He was one of the best shooters. But the guy he was, everybody respected.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Steph is the same way.
Mm. I'm going to put you on the spot before we get to these quick hitters. Top three NBA players of all time.
Ooh.
Come on.
I ain't going to say no order.
Give me three.
For me, Jordan for sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Magic for sure.
Mm.
And, man, I need one more. Oh, I love Reggie Miller.
Mm, okay.
This is the most odd three we've ever heard.
But that's history.
No, it's history. I'm saying we've never heard that three before. This is the first time we heard that those three guys.
Reggie don't get shouted out enough.
Reggie was cold.
Reggie doesn't have a championship because of our dumbasses.
Yeah. But I'm saying
that's why he don't have a championship because of us.
But he was a killer though in crunch time.
The truth.
I respect
always
it.
Always
the truth.
Yeah,
clutch.
Competitor, dog.
Nah, he one of the ones for me. Mm-hmm.
Reggie's that, no question.
He one of the ones for me for sure. Oh, Gary Payton.
Town business.
The glove.
I got to talk to GP because I saw something that bothered me recently. Vernon Maxwell said he knocked him out in practice.
Jelani was there.
He didn't knock him out? He said he knocked him out. Okay, all right. All right, he put something on it?
He got off?
All right, quick hitters. First thing to come to mind, let us know. If you could sit ringside at any fight in history, which one would it be and why?
They got to be like...
any fight ever.
That actually happened?
That happened.
Yeah. Sugar Ray Robinson fight.
Ooh.
He had 100 and something, so pick one. But a Sugar Ray Robinson fight.
Mm-hmm.
He's different.
True boxer.
Yeah, you know Sugar Ray Robinson.
To say that, because like anybody else would have said some fight that we all know of.
Yeah, nah,
but Sugar
Ray Robinson.
You're a real Hall of Famer.
I wanted to see what that looked like.
Yeah. Top five boxers of all time.
Man, y'all out here making me work today. I'm going to give you my big three, Roy, Bernard, Floyd. I'm going to say Ali and Robinson.
Easy enough.
I thought he was going to say Salvador Sanchez.
Hey, I got Salvador Sanchez on my wall in my house. I respect it. But I'm gonna say
Roy's guy.
But yeah, I'm gonna give my three in my era, and then I gave y'all two just all time.
I get it. Yeah. Fight night or training camp rotation? Three artists you're messing with?
I don't know if y'all know Lecrae.
Yeah,
come on, gospel rapper. Yeah,
T Dot, Tadashi, my boy KB. He a gospel rapper.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth, he from Philly.
The truth.
Another gospel rapper, yeah.
Something you wish you were better at?
Anything, don't even have to be boxing related.
Man, I wish I could sing. Wish I could hold a note, blow.
God knew not to let me sing, boy. Ooh, I would have been fucking him up if I could sing.
I wish I could sing.
It really wouldn't have been fab.
I wish I could sing.
Hold a note, boy. Yeah. You would have really been on your cheek on the bar shit.
I would have my hair wetter, because I'd be shaking my shit on motherfuckers. If
you could sing?
Yeah, if I could sing, I'd be.
Oh, I wish I could hold a note.
Yeah. Five dinner guests, dead or alive.
Ali Robinson. My daddy.
Yes.
I wish I could talk to my daddy at this point in life and talk through it. Yeah. My grandfather, we called him Dad.
We'll come back to that one.
During this interview, dog, I wasn't the Hall of Famer and the superstar in my sport as you are in yours. But during this interview, I realized we're more alike than I thought we were.
Yeah.
Yep, especially the way we think about our family.
Yeah.
How much we care about like the father and all that type of stuff. Like all that stuff resonate with me.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you came, bro, because we more alike than I thought.
You want to give him a hug?
Man, I appreciate
I'll give him a hug afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Just asking.
One guest you would like to see on All the Smoke.
Real quick, probably my fifth one would probably be my grandmother.
Grandmother.
Okay. Yeah.
Three family, two boxes.
We call her grandmother. Yeah.
If you could see one guest on All the Smoke, who would it be?
Y'all said y'all had Roy already?
Yeah. But I'm going to interrupt real quick because we named three heavy hitters on this show tonight that you cool with. The guy that put the shoes on your feet.
I didn't finish the question, though.
The manager the manager at Roc Nation and the little homie from the Bay.
Yeah.
So, but finish the question. My bad. I interrupted.
But before you answer your question, you have to help us get your answer on our show.
Oh.
So it's got to be somebody in your phone.
Marshawn Lynch?
Beast mode.
Y'all had
that's
him?
Bro. No, so I did something different with him. But yeah, I've been trying to get him.
He ain't been on this, though.
Nah.
He ain't been on here.
Yeah. Marshawn.
Yeah.
That's going to be a crazy episode.
I did a sit down with him. He dope.
Yeah, that's my brother.
Different energy.
Shout out to Beast Mode. Shout out to Beast Mode.
That's my brother, man.
All right, last one. Childhood crush. We can't let you go home without this one.
Man.
Yeah, whoever sent him his boxes, I ain't had a box in 4 months.
They're trying to tell you something.
He's trying to get the shout out.
They've been trying to tell me for the last couple of years, but I've been threatening people, so maybe my threats ain't working no more. Got to call MJ again.
Threatening people for shoes.
Yeah, I did, most of them.
I'm going to tell y'all how I'm about to spin this one. Me and my wife, we married young. We met young and married young.
Mm-hmm. So it's wifey?
Wifey, my childhood crush.
I respect that.
Because when I seen her, like, who was that? She was different.
She from the Bay?
She from Seattle.
Okay.
And it's crazy because it was a bunch of people around. I had just went to go visit my brother for the first time because he moved from the Bay Area to Seattle. So I went and visited him. It was his birthday. They was getting lit out of school, and they was in high school at the time. We all was in high school. And I'm like, who was that? And, like, I done had crushes, but, like, she was different. Like, so when I seen her, I liked her. But when I talked to her, I really liked her. And I knew, without even fully knowing how it was going to happen, if it should happen, or how it was going to happen, man, I want to be with her. And to this day, bro, believe it or not, man, 20 years, we probably been together 22, been married 20. Damn. Man, I still got that same love for that girl, man. Same love. And I tease her all the time. I'm like, yeah, I got the girl. Like, I got the girl that I wanted.
That's dope.
So I got to shout my wife out, man. I got to shout her out, man.
Absolutely.
You know, I get a lot of the interviews and a lot of the press and stuff like that, but she's one of the main reasons why I'm still standing, doing what I'm doing. And, man, she a soldier, man. And I love my wife because she ain't no scary wife either. Like, she not closing her eyes at ringside. She like, get him. Hit him back.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the amount of stuff, even to this day, that I bring home to her. But I'm trying to talk through it, vent through it. And man, she's solid, bro. She's so wise. And man, I got the girl that I wanted.
Behind every good man is a great woman. That's dope.
Yeah, I'm grateful for my wife, man.
Well, man, thank you. We appreciate your time, y'all. Man. For someone who, to me, I felt like really didn't get the respect that you deserve, but it's just like, to me, after this interview, none of that shit mattered to you. You know, your path was planned out, and you made it work, and the transition you made, although now we know it was tough, you made the transition look seamless into your next, you know, path. So, man, we appreciate your time. We appreciate having you, and best of luck, bro.
Man, I appreciate you, but I'm gonna say one last thing before I go. You know, I know a lot of people, and I know it's really because they rock with me and they support me, and I appreciate that. When they say I didn't get the respect that I deserve, I really did, though.
You think so?
From the right ones.
The one that mattered the most.
Yeah. And what I didn't get, it wasn't mine. Mm. And I truly believe that you know, God blessed me, you know, in many different ways. I'm just going to use boxing, through the boxing game. But he ain't let me fall in love with it so much that when it was time to walk away, I couldn't walk away. So he let me get my taste and you know, he let me get my love and stuff like that, and it's worldwide. But he also blocked me too and didn't let me get so much that when it was time to walk, I couldn't walk. So I'm at peace with what I did, I'm at peace with what I received, and I'm at peace with what I didn't receive.
Beautiful. I see you got your lineup on point on this motherfucking cover right here. Where could everybody get
I gotta shout my boy out, Bar the Barber. He in Vegas.
Yeah. Boy, this is award winning right here. He did. I'm not talking about the book. I'm talking about the hairline.
Yes, sir.
Where can everybody get your book at right now?
You get the book anywhere books are sold. Bookstore, Barnes & Nobles. You can Amazon, you name it, man.
I'm gonna keep this one.
The audio book.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep this one.
And the audio. You can get the audio or the physical copy.
Well, Dre, man, we appreciate your time.
Anytime,
man.
Brother. I appreciate y'all, man.
Man, that's a wrap. Andre Ward.
SOG.
The new All the Smoke. I don't even know where the fuck you catch this now. Where you catching this at? It's not, is it? So YouTube?
They ain't got to say that no more, man. It's just us now. Yeah, we owners now. We ain't got to say all the other bullshit names.
Okay, catch us on YouTube. You know where we at. We going to be where we at.
Yeah.
With a little bit more money this time. Yeah. Man, we'll see y'all next week.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.